Hello, and welcome to the third episode of our podcast, Dare Ye Enter the Goblin Cave. Today, I have with me my friend, Andrew.
Hello.
And today, we're going to be telling stories about a jar and something that seems to have fallen from the sky.
What could it be? Do you know?
I do have a general idea. In fact, I have an entire story written about it.
Oh, really? You prepared an entire story for this podcast?
Yes, sir. I'd originally written one story, and this was long, long ago. Mm. And then a squad of ravens came by and snatched it up, and they flew away.
Tragic.
Yeah.
Did they drop the story, though?
In the sewer.
Oh, okay.
That's why I smell so bad.
I gotcha.
Anyways, so to start my podcast, typically I have my guest choose one of these wooden dice and then roll it in here, but also choose odds or evens.
What if I roll two dice? Can
no,
I do that?
Fuck you.
Whoa, if I just add them together?
No.
Why not?
No.
Okay, fine. Let's roll a d20.
Odds or even?
Evens.
You would. 14.
It gets that goes first.
You're going first.
It gets. Yes.
What?
I don't know. Apparently the die wants me to go first. So we'll go first.
Yes, sir. Alright, so before we get to that, Andrew, how hath your week been?
It hath been good.
Doth.
Doth do this. Alright, yes. Yeah,
so yonder.
Now, the week's been good. It's keeping busy at work. My lungs don't hurt anymore, so that's a plus.
Tight.
So I can actually speak without wimp grimacing. So, week's been up. Week's been good. How about yourself?
Diggity dope dude. I made some coffee at the shop.
Then you made some more coffee?
Yeah, and I kept doing it for like
a week?
Yeah.
Alright. And now we're here.
And I made some coffee here. And I drank a lot of it. And I didn't sell any of it.
Oh. That's okay, though. You don't want to sell it to yourself. That's just wasted money.
Is it?
Maybe. Because it just cycles. It keeps the economy going.
Does it?
It's like a government...
I ain't paying taxes on my own damn cup of coffee.
Fair enough.
Okay. I've been taxed enough already.
Have you?
Yeah.
Okay. I have two.
I'm ready
to... I hate taxes.
You know, I'm ready to start a party.
The no tax party.
Yeah. It's a coffee party.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do at this coffee party?
Oh, we just sip coffee and talk.
Sounds fancy.
Yeah, yeah.
Can I join?
Yeah, totally.
What's the entry fee?
There's no entry fee.
You just have to bring coffee.
Yeah.
Okay. It's a nice party. Honest way to have a party.
This was a tea party reference, but it's just gone totally haywire.
I just throw in the river, start over.
Yeah, okay. Anyways. So how about instead of a tea party, we have a podcast.
Party.
That we read. Party.
Okay.
Here's your story. Thank you, Raven.
Cacao! Alright. Protect. That was his mission. That was his purpose. Clad in the smooth, pitch-black armor of its people, Antonio stood watch on a small hill, guarding the entrance to the underground city where he and his people lived. He was born a warrior, and it was his duty to keep the peace and ward off any and all dangers. Before him was the open wilds, an endless forest of green, great spires jutting out of the earth, protecting everything and anything that might lie within. To his left, he saw the great tree, reaching up into the heavens, its tallest branches piercing the clouds above. Its smaller branches towards the bottom, acting as homes for the countless creatures in the lands. On all horizons, there was a great amber cliffside which prevented all but the most clever of beings from passing through. Antonio believed, or at least he did when he was younger, that this was a barrier created by the gods to protect this land from the dangerous monsters that lay beyond. On his right, however, was the great structure that acted as home for a titan. Little was known about the colossal structure, and less still about the being that lived inside. Though there were countless expeditions to explore what lay inside, none had ever returned. Only one thing was known: the titan needed to consume. Every dawn, the creature would discard the carcasses of the countless life forms it had gnawed on. Ripped flesh, charred fat, snapped bones, all of which from creatures that dwarfed Antonio. Despite the horror that the pile of death might cause most, Antonio's people saw this as an opportunity. Their monarch had seen this bounty laid before them, and she had set up their colony on the outskirts of the Titan's home so that they might scavenge leftovers of its conquests. Antonio watched in the morning as many of the workers under his care went about their daily lives, foraging for food left behind and bringing back material to strengthen and repair the city. The life of the colonists was seldom exciting, but there was never time to rest. Some commotion drew Antonio's attention, and he quickly looked to see a group of laborers struggling to carry home what looked like a bone, though its size was nearly that of the entire city. While he appreciated the thought of them putting in a lot of work to bring this prize back to the people, part of him despised it. If given such an enormous amount of food, their people might take a break from working. Laziness, at least as he saw it, was the root of all evil and the reason for the people's suffering. In his eyes, hardship was the greatest strength. And while he was busy thinking on the matter, the ground began to shake. Thud, thud, thud. Limbs hitting the dirt, running. He quickly looked around, thinking what might be approaching. The thudding increased. Thud, 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 thud. The large sounds echoing throughout the wilds. He snapped his head, looking around. To his right, finally, he saw the creature and come to realize that was the Titan's guardian. Its stature was greater than all, save for the Titan itself. Antonio could not see the top of the beast no matter how hard he tried, for his neck simply could not turn that much. Four great limbs dug into the ground below with such force that the great mounds of earth were spewing from behind it. A fifth limb was flailing behind the creature, ready to crush any and all that attempted to come near. The beast lowered its head as it ran, cracking open its great maw. A maze of sharp teeth welcomed Antonio. Before there was time to react, the beast was upon the workers that were attempting to bring home their prize. All Antonio could do was listen to the cacophony of bones snapping, thunderous howls from the beast, and the screams of terror and agony from his people. In an instant, the beast had arrived, and in another it had left, taking with it the food and any workers foolish enough to hold on to it. Antonio was left to ponder what he had seen. He hung his head in shame, feeling at fault for not warning the workers or being ready to protect them. He had failed, and he vowed never to fail again. It had been months since the beast had made its attack, and the people moved on, their constant search for food driving them past their despair. Though many hid from any sign of danger, Antonio faced them head on. Any and all dangers he now vowed to annihilate. Flying pillagers, roaming bands and marauders, it mattered not. He was always first to lead the attack and drive them away from his people. All the conflict had left his armor scarred and damaged, but it had the opposite effect on his will. Regardless of the threat he faced, he approached it with a grim and purposeful demeanor, or at least, most of the threats. It was a morning like any other, with Antonio watching the lands when the ground shook once more. A great thud echoed through the lands. Many of the workers began to panic, but Antonio knew this was not the sound of any monster. He looked around, searching for where the sound had come from. So he looked around, analyzing the fields, analyzing the lands around him. Fields of small hills, shiny statue, pile of... a shiny statue? In the distance, Antonio saw the new addition to the land. It took the shape of one of the beasts. They had only encountered them a few times in all their history, for they had nothing that interested the creature. It was similar to the guardian, but traded size for admirability. Instead of a long maw with jagged teeth, it had a short face with horrific, glowing eyes. Why any being would construct a statue of it confused Antonio, but he could worry about it later. First, he had to ensure that no threat would come from it. Antonio quickly gathered all the available warriors they had, save for some who needed to remain on guard, and set forth through the wilds. It was a short enough journey, passing through all the great green structures. Looking through, they couldn't see much past it, for they were tiny, and the green structures dwarfed them, but they carried on nonetheless. Finally, they reached a clearing. Many of the green structures lay trodden and buried under the statue, as it crushed anything before it. The statue was just larger than the hill that led to their home, and its sleek white body reflected the harsh sun onto the warriors. The moments upon which they looked at it felt like an eternity for most, as all the mysteries and questions filled their mind. "What is it?" said one. "Is this a sign from the gods?" said another. One freaked out, panicking in the moment. "An omen of what is to come!" Yet another, "We should leave it, lest we anger it." Antonio was irritated by the many worries, but kept himself quiet, letting his curiosity settle before making any statement. The many voices continued to argue until one of the warriors near the front spoke something that seemed to calm, or at least redirect, the worries. I smell food. A hush washed over the band as they approached the statue, curious as to what it had to do with the scent. They climbed atop it, looking for any indication that it was more than it appeared to be, until one of them reached its neck. There is food in here! I can smell it! All who gathered close could recognize the scent. Sweets, salts, warm grain. It was a rare occasion that the Titan would discard such great meals, but every time they found scraps, their people were happy. All that was needed was to claim what laid inside. Just as hope began to swell, another creature burst from the plants around. It was as large as the head of the statue, its eyes as large as one of the warriors themselves. It used its hooked claws to drag its fattened body and fleshy tail forward towards the statue. Its pointed mouth opened, welcoming the band ahead. Be gone! This prize is mine! To accentuate its statement, the beast lunged forward and crushed two of the warriors. The remaining band quickly moved to avenge their fallen, climbing atop the beast and striking with their blades wherever they believed they could. The beast, however, was coated in endless spines and oil, preventing any and all weapons from finding purchase. Antonio slashed at the back of the beast with righteous fury, but it did nothing. As the battle raged, the beast did not slow, and every moment another warrior was lost to the monster's ravenous slaughter. One of the warriors leapt off the beast, realizing that its attacks were pointless. He ran to the statue, hoping to use it as a barrier between himself and death, but he did not move fast enough. The beast laughed as he charged into the escaping warrior, crushing him against the statue. Though the beast was much smaller than the statue, Antonio watched as both shook under the impact. A plan began to sprout into the jaded warrior's mind, and he knew he had to act fast before the beast finished them all off. With a quick wave of his hand, Antonio commanded the remaining handful of warriors jump off the beast and seek cover of the wilderness around them. At least Antonio could protect the remaining warriors by keeping the beast occupied. This only seemed to amuse the beast. Your friends abandon you, it called up, knowing there was one more warrior remaining on its back. And why shouldn't they? The only being nearby that could slay me is that guardian, and it's still busy with the remains it claimed from you weeks ago. Without a queen here to command your people, you don't have the numbers to stop me. Your cause is hopeless. Give in to despair and leave this prize to me. If you give up now, I might even spare you. A toothy grin escaped the beast as the words oozed out. Failure was not an option. Antonio needed to succeed. Pushing all doubt out of his mind, he ran through everything he had seen, looking for a solution. Seeing an opportunity, Antonio climbed down off the beast. Assuming it had won, the creature let the remaining warrior climb down without hesitation. And as Antonio began to walk away, the creature let itself become swallowed up by its pride, soaking in the temporary victory. Though the creature was fast and most of its hide protected, Antonio had noticed that its tail was defenseless and that its arms were short, meaning it couldn't reach the base of it. You're right. We are alone. There are no dogs here. No queens. Only ants. As the words escaped his mouth, Antonio replaced them with the tail of the beast. He bit down as hard as anybody could, digging into the flesh. A shriek leapt the monster as it flailed around, trying to dislodge the warrior. Howling in pain and flailing its arms, the beast was rendered helpless. It twisted its head around, looking for anything that could be used to dislodge the warrior. The narrow eyes locked onto the statue, and it broke into a sprint. At the last moment, it spun around to smash its tail into the statue, but Antonio had already let go. The beast slammed into the base of the statue in desperation. The collision shook both of them, but this time with much greater force. The structure wobbled and fell towards the beast, but with its back turned, the creature had no way of reacting to the coming vengeance. Thud! Crack! Splat! The battle was over. Antonio went to get up, prying himself from the rock that had broken his fall. He looked across the field, mourning all the people they had lost. A heavy price was paid. He had to make sure it was worth it. He struggled to drag himself forward, the fall doing more damage than he anticipated. The beast lay dead under the statue. The head of the statue itself had tumbled off during the battle. Inside the hollow belly of the statue was their reward, a bounty enough to feed their colony for months. He had atoned for his mistake with the Guardian and had ensured his people would be able to live safely while they recovered their strength. He realized now that it was personal sacrifice, not hardship, that was the strength of their people. It did not take long after the battle for the warriors he had sent back to return with reinforcements. They arrived to find Antonio laying still next to the open statue. They carried him and the other fallen back to their home, so that they might be remembered as heroes. The great statue was emptied of its bounty, and for the first time since their colony had come to this dangerous land, they were allowed to survive within the safety of their city. In death, Antonio achieved his goal. He ensured that his people would be protected for a time. So, something did fall from the sky, and it was a cookie jar.
It was a cat. Oh, these were ants!
Yes, it was a cat-shaped cookie jar.
Oh my god, this was written... Antonio,
yes.
Oh, that totally makes it. See, I was wondering why he bit down...
When he had a sword, right?
Yeah, when he had a sword.
Yeah, well, they had blades, but their blades were their mouth. The two mandibles, yeah. And that's why there was dogs.
His blackened carapace armor?
Yep.
I should have seen this coming, but...
Yeah, the great amber barrier, the cliff sides. That was just a fence. There's in someone's backyard.
And so what was this creature that killed? A mouse?
A rat.
Oh.
Because rats have fleshy tails. Mice have hairy tails, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck. That really got me. Okay. Nice.
Yeah, very nice. A little bit of misdirection leading into it, but it's from the perspective of ants. Like, they don't know they're ants.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there's a little bit of fourth wall breaking calling it a dog, but that was just because I had to.
No dogs, no queens, only ants. I should have picked it up then. Okay.
Maybe.
Okay. All right. Very nice. Very nice. Fuck. That's clever.
But speaking of clever, we have one more story.
I would not call this clever. No.
But what is it then?
It's kind of like a bunch of like fart jokes.
It's clever enough.
No. Okay.
Anyways.
Far to the east of the ominous South Drakus jungles, over mountaintops and across miles of plains, quite near the coast actually, lies a small hamlet known as Grimjaw's Fortress. Though none of the simple folk know of any fortress here, many believed it was named this as a joke, or to keep the weirdos away. Indeed, Grimjaw's was a simple town, had everything one might need, save for a variety of food. Both our stories had...
They have food issues, right?
Yeah, food issues.
Everyone's starving, everyone's hungry, they just need to eat.
Well, these guys, they had food, but they didn't have a variety of food.
You know what we should have done? We should have eaten for the stories.
I'm eating a salad right now.
True. Yeah, so you got some good food.
Yeah.
But is there much variety in that salad? That's the real question.
There's a carrot.
That's enough variety. It's probably more than they have.
Probably. Well, you see, actually, in the next sentence here, save for a variety of food, all they had in that regard was beans and octolama meat. In order to maintain sanity, the leaders of the town elected to have an annual chili cook-off to see who had the most interesting food. The winner's dish would be sold in all the taverns and inns for the duration of the year. Needless to say, the octolama steaks were high.
So is that just along with like 8 legs?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Over the years, the various farmers had taken to importing spices and other vegetables in order to give them an edge in the competition. And once they won, through a cutthroat business tactic known as horizontal integration, they would absorb many of the smaller farms, thusly eliminating competition for the next year. And on this day, only 3 remain. They'll be using all their cunning and culinary skill. All are dead set on stealing the prize. 'Twas the night before the great chili cook-off, and all the town's merchants were setting up shop in Festival Field, so named for its penchant for holding festivals. It was a glorious affair. Streamers and lanterns lighting all the makeshift and temporary stalls, all manner of octolama products were to be sold in the morning, including itchy sweaters, ugly scarves, and just plain awful socks, made with 100% octolama hair. The animals were in their pens, just now falling asleep, while the merchants were busy putting the finishing touches on just about everything. Albert, of the Arrow Family Farm Incorporated, was stirring his cauldron of chili, word for word reciting his family's traditional recipe, but this time, he had a secret weapon. He pulled forth from under the counter a chain-laden box about 1 foot long. He took a key from around his neck and unlocked said box, full of wiry hay and a single solitary jar labeled Secret Ingredient. He undid the lid and breathed deeply as herbal and fragrant aroma. Yes, this was sure to win him the prize, even if it did cost him a small fortune to acquire. Soon, he thought, In about 1 hour's time, he would add the secret blend of 51 herbs and spices and assure his victory. But until then, there was less honest business to conduct. He hastily donned his llama fur cloak and grabbed a spotted and stained potato sack. It emanated an eye-watering aroma of super intense spice. The bag bore the skull and crossbones, as well as a few sick demon runes stitched into the bottom. With this, he dashed into the night. Meanwhile, in the chili cookroom down the street, Farmer Ben was letting his chili pot simmer under a roaring fire, neglecting it as he lorded over his own secret weapon. A jar, nearly identical to the secret spice jar in Albert's possession, he held it in his hands. However, his jar reeked of Octolama sweat, for it was full of nothing but fur, sweat, and cinnamon. He tucked the jar under his brown cloak and departed into the night. Ben crept into Albert's tent and immediately spotted the spice jar. Careful and quiet as a rat in the night, he swapped his awful jar for the one on the table, then went back to his own tent, adding the entire jar of glorious spice to his own overcooked mix. After doing so, and allowing the smug feeling of imminent victory to settle in his stomach, he realized something was off. Something in his chili was off. Stirring and examining thoroughly, he noticed several odd clumps. What could these odd, light tan rubbery things be? He scooped one out to examine, and after minutes of poking, prodding, and yes, tasting, he determined it to be a clump of expired tofu. And he knew of only one place in town to get expired tofu. The damn vegan farmer Craig. He set out into the night to pay the foul deed forward. Meanwhile, Albert was standing over Craig's cauldron, sneezing and crying and trying to keep the bag of doom spice steady as he adds it to the vegan chili.
Doom spice.
I didn't know what to call it.
I love it.
As the crushed peppers fall into Craig's chili, they sizzled and smoked, and the frothing bubbles seemed to form a skull and bones pattern. Albert collects himself, wipes the tears from his puffy eyes, and leaves the building just before Ben enters. Ben looks to his left, and then to his right. He sees nobody else. However, he can see the door to the cookroom is ajar. He enters anyway. He wraps a length of cloth around the cauldron's handles and hefts it up, hurriedly carrying the bubbling cauldron out of the room and into the night. He speeds towards the Octolama pens, while the spicy, intense heat threatens to blind him. Eventually, he makes it to the pens and buries the cauldron under mounds of fresh hay and probably Octolama poop. He darts away long before he could tell the feeble disguise would not last. The spicy heat of those demonic peppers began setting the hay alight. Soon, all that was hiding it was ash. The light from the fire caught the attention of just one of the Octolamas. As day broke, the festival was on. The townsfolk had chosen this day in particular, for it was the only day of the year that the so-called Octolama star constellation was visible in broad daylight. So too would a comet come to pass, and they believed that this comet's passing would signify plenty of crops to be had. The festival was on, and as the festival started up, folk were getting turned up on turnip juice and going from stall to stall buying awful socks. "Hear ye, hear ye," cried the town crier, "'tis time for the chili tasting." All the town's food critics grabbed their bowls, and the head food critic, Rordan Gamzee, appointed last summer after his victory in the arena, approached the first stall. He filled his bowl to the brim, taking note of its uneven and hairy texture. He inhaled the aroma. Cinnamon was a bold move, he thought. However, it just wasn't meant to be. He slurped the hairy broth, swishing over his taste buds. 5 out of 10, he exclaimed. Whose harebrained idea was it to add the fucking fur? All laughed, save for Albert and the critic, who just looked ashamedly at one another. He moved on to Ben's stall. There, two hot serving wenches were handing out tasting thimbles to all manner of disappointed and confused customer. Ben served the critic a bowl of chili himself. The overpowering amount of exotic spices would prevent most folk from realizing the terrible truth of this chili. However, Rordan was a seasoned food connoisseur. He took one sip, spat it out, and slapped Ben upside the dome. 4 out of 10. Should be a crime what you did. Ben stared down at his feet and backed away. Rorden went to visit the third chili stall, finding Craig slouching in his chair, nursing a tankard of turnip juice. "Where's your chili?" Gordon barked. "I don't have it. Taking a different approach, you see. Like a all-vegan palate cleanser," Craig offered Rorden a kale chip. Rorden took one bite, gagged on its bitterness and crisp nature. It lingered in his mouth far longer than any man should endure. "Ugh." 3 out of 10. Couldn't even add some nacho cheese or Cool Ranch flavor to balance it out? You sicken me. He sped off down the block towards the announcer's stage, but was stopped halfway to the stage by a young farmhand. "Hey, I'm Dirk, the farmhand's son. I have a bowl of mediocre chili for you to try." Rorden was thoroughly worn out of awful surprises. He gave the boy the stink eye and said, "There better not be too much piss in here, or I swear I'll deck you one, you little," and then he sipped. He opened his eyes wide and sipped again. It was okay, or not great or anything, but it had, like, a little spice and a good amount of beans. It was, you know, mostly liquid, but whatever. He smiled at the boy. 5.1 out of 10. He shot towards the announcement stage and stood on the pedestal as the crowd gathered, eager to hear this year's victor. Rorden gazed over the crowd and spoke. "Before I could announce a winner," he glanced at Dirk, "we must look to the sky and watch for the comet's arrival and pray for the health of our fields." The crowd cheered and waited, then waited some more, and waited for about 45 minutes until they saw it. A bright blue light in the sky. It shot by slow at first, but something changed. It grew brighter and whiter, and after a thunderous boom, it entered the atmosphere. It hurled towards the town, and a screaming and flaming ball of metal and ice, it smashed to scurth, causing a shockwave that sent tarps and tents flying. It landed directly inside the Octolamas' pen, blowing the walls apart with celestial fury. The Octolamas, however, were okay with this. It is what they had been expecting, for they had drank from the dank demon brew of Doom Chili, and from that achieved a higher level of sentience. They faced the trials of Chili and survived. They had become spicy magi. They called down the comet to spark their revolution. The Octolamas rolled forth from their pens into crowds of townsfolk, swinging and flailing their many legs, slicing dudes in half with razor-sharp claws. The skull and bones seared into their chests, they spat fire into their human captors and former friends. Soon the town fell, and all were slain, save for those who ran for help. Upon the ashes of the Octolama pen stood Death Fister, the revolutionary Octolama leader. Far larger than his kin, standing quadrupedal, holding a twisted staff made from farmer bones, woven into a proper weapon by his own foul magics. This bony staff encased the blue and glowing sky stone, which appeared to have a pupil, staring right at you. News of the tragedy at Grimjaw's fortress spread like fleas on an Octolama, till it arrived at the door of a bar called Scar, where many of the land's greatest adventurers congregate to drink and swap tales about combat and treasure. There, a party of hooded figures sat at a table, two slender and tall, and one kind of fat, standing maybe 2 feet 4 inches tall. The town crier from earlier entered the establishment and addressed the gathered crowd, detailing information of the fearsome Octolamas and the Sky Stone. When word of the Sky Stone is spoken, the shortest hooded figure perked up, riveted, and nodded to his elven compatriots.
Oh, shit. He's back.
Yeah.
Oh.
He's back.
Oh, such a good tie-in at the end. You know, honestly, I was getting to that story. I'm like, all right, it's just a taste test. This is fine. I'm not sure it's supposed to fall from the sky, though. And then just, like, out of fucking nowhere.
Oh, buddy. Oh,
man. I love all the Octolama jokes.
This is a mess.
This is a beautiful mess, though.
I appreciate that.
It's like a car crash that explodes like onto modern art, you know?
I'd say it's like a car crash, but instead of like a car, it's a pickup truck with a bunch of chili in the back.
And it hit a bunch of Octolamas.
Yeah.
I gotcha, yeah. Oh, man. So who are the two elves?
Oh, that.
I need to catch up.
That's a secret.
Okay. Because I know what the Rippet is.
No one knows who the elves are yet.
I know what the Rippet's coming from, though.
Yeah.
It's Frog Face, right?
Yes.
Frog Face, my hero.
As soon as Declan and I have a next episode, we'll figure out who those elves are.
So it's a mystery to be discovered soon.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. I thought this is just like the backstory for a quest. Like, it's this is just like, you know that weird quest where you went to a village fueled by, like, demon-worshipping octolemmas? This is what happened. This is how it got to that point.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Everything we do is just backstory for everything we're gonna do.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
That's a very good point.
And everything an octolemma does is probably fucking evil. Fuck those dudes.
This is, I give the story, though, Octa 0.1 out of 10.
Thanks. All right, and that's the end of the podcast. Toodles.
Goodbye.